Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Welcome to another edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining me this Friday evening for what should be a very good show. On everyone's mind this week is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, often referred to as Obamacare. As of January 2014, every American is required to have health insurance, and open enrollment begins Tuesday, October 1st. If you still have more questions than answers, this show will help. The Affordable Care Act bill is packed with information. Even the condensed version of the bill is 2,000-plus pages. So tonight, we have a professional to break it all down. Get your pens and paper ready, because there is a lot of really good information about to be shared. on this show about Obamacare. But before we begin, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. That said, ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome Doug Bacon. He owns his own insurance company. It's called Texas Insurance Provider Services, LLC, and is certified in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Good evening, Doug. Welcome, Center Stage.
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Good evening.
Good evening.
You know, Doug, I honestly got all I've heard for the last week on television is Obamacare, Obamacare, Obamacare. Obviously, it's something on everybody's mind. But why do you think this particular bill has been so controversial? Any ideas about why that has been?
Well, it will change the entire way we look at health care in this country.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, once health care reform begins, insurance carriers can no longer ask about any pre-existing health conditions. So what I tell people when I'm talking to them is that basically everybody becomes healthy January 1 because no longer can pre-existing conditions either cause your rates to go higher or you cannot be declined because of pre-existing health conditions.
I hear and understand that some 48 million Americans do not have insurance as of today.
Yeah, I believe that's pretty much correct, yes.
Wow. And so that means 48 million people who didn't have insurance as of January 1 are absolutely required to have insurance. So enrollment begins, I understand, Tuesday.
Right. And enrollment, the first open enrollment will be from October 1st through March 31st of 2014. If you enroll between October 1st and December 15th, your policy will be effective January 1st. So even though you're enrolled, you really technically won't have coverage until January 1st. If you elect to wait until after December 15th, then your policy won't be effective till February. And then if you enroll in January, it won't be effective till March and so on until you get past March 31st. After March 31st, you won't be able to enroll again or change your coverage until next year, which will begin October 15th and run through December 7th, now, unless you have a qualifying event. And there's a whole list of types of qualifying events.
Such as?
Well, like change in marital status. If you currently have a health insurance plan under the current system, in other words, if you have a current plan where they have used underwriting, underwriting refers to asking health questions and about your health history. If you currently have a plan under the current system, then when your plan renews, and most plans renew on a yearly basis, when it renews, that can be a qualifying event. So that if you are renewing, say, in June, then June of next year, you could choose to you will be required to change your plan to the new health care reform requirements.
Okay. So open enrollment begins, and there's more questions, as I said, than answers, because I understand the condensed version was 2,000-plus pages, as I stated in the intro. The actual manual is how many pages? It's like thousands and thousands of pages, correct?
Well, I have no idea. They're changing that all the time. They're adding stuff all the time, and a lot of what we feel is going to happen, almost the minute we say it, 2 minutes later, there's a change or addition or a modification to what we think is going to happen. So this thing will be evolving over time. Health insurance is really driven by numbers, and the fewer claims that are paid out or filed, that's what drives the cost down. The more claims that are filed, that's what drives the cost up. So people that are sitting out there right now with pre-existing conditions, more than likely are looking forward to bringing in health care, so that, that way they don't have those pre-existing condition issues to deal with, and that is likely could drive the cost up. Most of the plans have not been released their rates yet. We should start knowing here pretty quick. Of course, we have to know by Tuesday, October 1st. So most of this stuff, we still don't know what rates are released yet, and really we don't quite know all the plan designs. We have a pretty good idea, but we really don't know what has all been approved across the United States. And I'm in Texas, so I can really only speak to how Texas is going to run things.
Okay, let's back up to the fact that you are in Texas so that we can, I guess, explain to the audience why we brought you on and considered you a professional to explain this. Tell us who is qualified to enroll people in this new Obamacare program.
Well, there's basically two types of people that can enroll people, and there's a breakdown of each one. Health insurance agents who have gone through the training, through the federal training to learn about the program and to get certified, they can enroll you in the health insurance on either a federal exchange or what they call marketplace, or enroll you in a private exchange or private marketplace. And I'll talk about those in a minute. The other individuals that can enroll you are called navigators, and there's different levels, if you will, of navigators. They have different titles or certified application assistants, and there's different people that can help you enroll that are, let's just say, for lack of a better term, employed by the federal government or supported by the federal government in some sort of way. Those individuals are not necessarily health insurance agents. There's a conflict that if a navigator is hired as a navigator, then they really cannot receive commissions from the health insurance carriers because of conflict of interest. So most navigators that you will talk to or application helpers, they will not be insurance agents. Now,
Let me pause you right there. So we know there's navigators and then there's insurance agents. Where would someone find a navigator who may say, I can sign you up? Is this somebody who's going to be coming knocking on your door? Or how would a person who's looking for insurance come in contact with a navigator?
More than likely not. We've seen on TV, at least here in Texas, where there's volunteer organizations going around to a lot of the households and knocking on the doors and letting them know about health care reform that's coming around. Those people are not necessarily navigators. They are just volunteers to let you know health care reform is taking effect and open enrollment's coming. Generally, what I've seen is organizations have gotten grants from the federal government to set up navigator programs. One of the larger ones that I know about, I've seen recently, is United Way. They recently got a large contract here in Texas, and I'm sure they have offices all over the United States to do that. You can go to a website called healthcare.gov. That is really the place to begin to look for plans and how to enroll. It's really set up and designed so that you can go out there yourself and you can enroll yourself. The difference really is with a health insurance agent, we will have access to all the plans across the board, whether it be private or federal or in the states that have the state exchanges, we'll have access to those. And so we've spent years and years learning about health insurance, and we've spent numerous hours since health care reform was passed learning about it and trying to understand the plans and the rates and the best options for somebody. So there's several different ways you can do it, and I would just say really I would try to contact a health insurance individual. If you don't know one, almost everybody knows somebody that has auto insurance. Contact a auto insurance agent. They may not be prepared to handle the health care, but they will know somebody who can. All health insurance agents have to be licensed through the state where they reside. And like in Texas, if you're not sure if you're talking to a health insurance agent, you can go out onto the Texas Department of Insurance website, and you can look up that person and see if they really have a health insurance license.
Okay, and let's start there then, because whenever something like this happens, when there's a big change, there's always scammers. What would you say is the best way for someone who's trying to get enrolled to not be scammed?
I was just reading about that very thing. AARP has released some 8 different tips about that. Let's see. Probably one of the best ways is to get some sort of identity protection right away. If you are failing that, deciding not to do that, if you are approached, we all, even the navigators, have to be very security-minded about your identity. We are not allowed to ask for your specific identity information. We can help you enroll, and yes, we can even sit down with you in front of a computer, or we can do it by mail, or we can do on applications, calling in, you know, by call in, that sort of thing. But just
let me ask the question this way. If someone were to ask me for my Social Security number, my banking information, and my W-2s, that's not information you all should be gathering?
Yes, it will have to be gathered, but I would find out who they are first before you do that. Because I can't be a navigator because of a health insurance agent, I don't really know what kind of training they've gone through and what kind of identification process there is to determine if that person is really a navigator.
Okay.
As far as a health insurance agent, it's pretty easy to find out who we are, and we have to go through certification every couple of years. We've already had to pay very close attention to people's identity and keeping information secure and that sort of thing. But even the stuff I was reading about how to watch out for scammers, we really don't need your Social Security number until we've decided what you're going to get, what plan you're going to get, whether you qualify, that sort of thing. And really, you should be the person going in and putting that information into the system. Of course, the whole thing hasn't been released yet, so we're just kind of waving our arms right now, going, "Well, we really should not be collecting that information." But at some point, the IRS and the government, and through the healthcare exchanges, they're going to need that information. So you will be exposing a lot of your financial income and your date of birth and your Social Security number. So as of right now, I would just be very, very cautious about it.
Okay. So let's just say just because enrollment begins October 1st doesn't necessarily mean you have to sign up October 1st. Maybe the people that are needing insurance need to start gathering information and see who is, you know, someone that they can trust before they start sharing information about themselves and what type of insurance they need and what their pre-existing conditions are.
Correct. If they are healthy and they don't really have any pre-existing conditions or they're very minor conditions, it may be advantageous for them in this first year to go out and get a regular health insurance plan and what we call an underwritten plan where you answer health questions. Some of those may be significantly lower rates than the new healthcare reform rates are. Since most of them haven't been completely released yet, we don't really know how much they're going to go up or that sort of thing. I saw a spreadsheet just the other day released that rates may be somewhere between 100% higher than what they are now. In other words, you may see if you're paying a $100 monthly rate right now, you may pay a $150 rate under healthcare reform. Go ahead.
So you're saying fees are going to go up?
Yep, they probably are. In some mm-hmm. cases, yes. In the it's age. Okay, there's several different ways that the premium is determined. It's determined by your geographical location. It's determined by your age. It's determined by whether you smoke. Those are the main criteria that are determining the rates. And so if you're in an older age bracket, your rates might actually come down from what they are now, because right now it's basically a 5 or 6 to 1 ratio. In other words, if a young person's paying $100 a month for the same coverage, an older person over 50 or over 55 or 60 is going to pay $500 to $600 a month. The healthcare reform is trying to design it so that it comes down to a 3 to 1 ratio. So when you do that, your $600 a month may come down to $500 or $400, where the younger crowd may end up paying $200 to $250. So some people are going to have lower rates, and some people are going to have a little bit higher rates.
You know, when I read up on this, it really seemed like, and I'm looking for my notes on that, it seemed more like a Robin Hood kind of insurance structure, if you will, because it seemed like the healthy was going to be taking on the burden of the sick and the elderly, and so therefore, you know, some kind of way, it seemed more like a Robin Hood type of structure than a fair structure. And I'm just being honest with the way that I saw that, because you know, we're going to be, that's what, there's my notes. It says, you know, I came up with the fact that the healthy people are paying into a system to help cover the cost of the older and the sicker that are insured. And that doesn't necessarily seem to be fair. But, I mean, but it is what it is. But I don't know that I necessarily see that to be fair.
Correct. And really, it's always been that way. In the health insurance market as it is today, we as insurance agents and the carriers have always looked to try to get a group plan in place, and we always try to look for a younger crowd, a healthier crowd, or a group of employees, because we knew the rates would be fairly low with that. And mm-hmm. what tended to drive those group rates up were somebody that has a heart problem or a cancer problem or that sort of thing. So the same scenario is going to exist now, just that what we're dealing with now is we're basically dealing with one group, United States of America. That is the group now, whereas really before we were dealing with, you know, mom and pop, this company and, you know, this company and this company, and everybody was rated a little bit differently according to the demographics of that company. Now we're dealing with the demographics basically of the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you're okay. Right. What keeps the cost down is a larger number of healthy people not filing claims. That's what keeps the cost down.
And that speaks for itself. I mean, because it just seems like, you know, the way this is structured, I don't know. There's going to be some very unhappy people, it just seems, the way that, you know, what I'm reading. And I guess it's necessary because everybody does need insurance. It's just,
right.
You know, it is what it is. So that's the people with pre-existing.
We're all going to get come down with a sickness sooner or later. We're all going to have a accident sooner or later. So when you're paying into the system, in reality, all it takes is one good claim, one strong claim to more than make up for all the premiums you paid. And that's the thing about insurance.
But, you know, it's kind of like, I'm just hoping that it doesn't turn out to be like Social Security. You know, you pay into it, and by the time it gets to be my turn, I may not get a chance to enjoy it. I'm just saying. But, you know, who knows? We're just going to hope for the best on this, because it seems like there's a whole lot of kinks in it right now anyway. So, as you say, things are constantly changing and evolving. So where we are today may not even be where we are 6 months from now.
Right. Exactly. Well, the health insurance companies, they will have to have their if they want to go out for a rate increase, they do have to go through a review board. They have to be able to show and prove that it is necessary for them to raise the rate. So it's not just going to be an automatic rate increase. What they're coming out with right now is what they're expecting to encounter in claims and that sort of thing. If there's not a whole lot of claims and stuff, it's very likely the rates could go down in a year.
Okay. So it's
not cast in stone, really.
That makes me happy. Let's talk about and I didn't understand this, there's different types of plans? Everybody's not going to be on this plan?
Yes. Basically, what the Affordable Care Act has designed, or Obamacare, or health care reform, is there's basically four plans, and they're calling them metal plans: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. The bronze plan is what's called a 60-40 plan. The silver is a 70-30, the gold is a 80-20, and the platinum is a 90-10. The first number is the number that the health insurance company pays. The second number is the number that the policyholder pays for medical bills. So there are some limits, some yearly limits that I think it's a little over $10,000 maximum out of pocket for each of the plans. So in a 60-40 plan, if you had a major event happen, you could get to that $10,000 out of pocket number pretty quickly. Whereas with a 90-10 or a 80-20 plan, your 20% or 10% is going to be a lot slower before you get to that $10,000 mark. So in a sense, you may never really reach that max amount of pocket mark, but you might reach it pretty quickly under the bronze plan.
Okay, let's understand. How is it determined if I'm going to be bronze or platinum?
You, the consumer, are the one that chooses. The benchmark plan, if you will, is the silver plan. That one is the 70-30. That one is what the subsidies that you can apply for are based on. And what a subsidy is when you go to sign up or enroll, one of the first things you're going to be inputting is your estimated yearly income from your W-2. It's going to be called MAGI, M-A-G-I, which is Modified Adjusted Gross Income. But it's basically everybody's adjusted gross income. There are some modifications to it, but in layman terms, it's basically what's reported on your W-2. If for an individual, if your income is less than 400% of poverty level, and poverty level is about almost $12,000, $11,000 and some change, then 400% of that is about, $45,000, $46,000. If your income is less than that mark, that 400%, then it's likely you will qualify for a subsidy. And I say likely because if your employer is offering a group plan, then you may not be able to go in and qualify for a subsidy on the federal exchange. If you go to the private exchange or private marketplace, you will not be able to use a subsidy. So if you go to the federal marketplace and an insurance agent can take you there and show you or guide you through the process, I say take you there, we can do it online, but a health insurance agent or a navigator can let you know how much you qualify for, because it'll pop up right away. It'll be in the system, and there's a calculator there, and you'll know. And then you can apply that subsidy towards any level of coverage that you choose. But it's based on the silver. That's the benchmark, if you will.
Now, Doug, we are 30 minutes into the show, and I'm already confused. I can imagine what everybody else is. And, y'all, I've been pouring over this information for a couple of days, and I'm thoroughly confused. If you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight for the topic, Obamacare, what you must know before you enroll. We're talking about terms that I've never heard before, y'all, like subsidies and marketplace and qualifications and metal plans, things and mandates. things that typically we don't have to deal with when we're trying to enroll in insurance, but that's what we're going to be facing when we're trying to enroll for this Obamacare program or the Affordable Care Act. So tonight, if you have a question or a comment about Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act is the more appropriate term, get on the phone lines. Call Doug. Ask him, you know, what you should be doing and what your family plan should look like. He could better answer some of your questions than you trying to figure out this gigantic manual of a bill called Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. So tonight, again, if you just tuned in, you come center stage for the topic, Obamacare, what you must know before enrolling. And Doug, you know, I'm listening to you, and I'm understanding a little, but I'm thinking, you know, we're talking, you know, money that a lot of people don't have, you know, so definitely people are going to want to try to get the most affordable plan that they can. What are the ways, you know, when you're trying to get the most affordable plan? Let's just be honest. Are people on commission that are going to be selling these plans to you? Because we know sometimes when people are driven by commission, they aren't always honest with the customer.
Thank you. That's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, the health insurance companies will still pay commissions. The commissions will be paid to the health insurance agent. Navigators will not be earning commissions. They will be employed on an hourly basis, earning an hourly pay. But the commission structure is there. If the health insurance company pays commissions on the private marketplaces, then they also have to pay the same commission on the federal or the state marketplace. That's a requirement in the law. The navigators will be earning an hourly pay, and I just heard an interview of one of the navigators in Florida the other night, and he was very specific about that they as navigators are not allowed to really give you an opinion. They can only give you the data, the information. They can assist you in filling out your forms, but as far as saying, well, you should really look at this plan or you should really consider doing this with your subsidy or whatever, they really are not allowed to do that. With a health insurance agent, we can look at the best use of your subsidy, the best place to place it based on your past history. If you're very healthy, maybe you should just get in the bronze plan and apply your as much of your subsidy towards that as you can, keeping your costs down. We can also guide the employers into, if an employer offers a health insurance plan, then you as the employee, you can still go to the federal marketplace, but you cannot qualify for a subsidy. Why? Because your employer is offering a plan, a qualified plan to you, and you elected not to take it, so therefore you won't be able to get your subsidy. So we as health insurance agents can go to that employer and say, hey, why don't you consider this idea or this idea? Now you'll still be able to offer benefits to your employees, and your employees will still be able to go to the federal marketplace and get their subsidies, and they'll still be able to get the same kind of coverage that you, Mr. Employer, were going to offer anyway. So there's different things that we can say and we can guide them to that, let's just say, the way we earn our living through the commissions. And if they don't talk to us, then they'll go to the navigator, but the health insurance company then keeps whatever commission would have been paid out. So the commission is still there. It's just where does it go?
Very good question. So for someone who's thinking, well, you know, what they're going to do as far as their insurance on their job, there's insurance rules for a company with 50 employees or less, and then there's rules for a company with 50 employees or better. Is that not correct?
Correct.
Okay.
The employer mandate to require employers to offer health insurance if they have more than 50 full-time equivalent employees, that's been postponed for a year. So
okay.
the mandate there and the penalty for not complying with that to offer health insurance, that penalty has been postponed for a year, so it won't go into effect till 2015. for employers of the less than 50 full-time equivalent employees, they are not required to offer health insurance. There is some there are some incentives for employers that have less than 25 employees to offer it, and they can get a tax subsidy or a tax credit, if you will, for offering it, health insurance, if they have less than 25 full-time equivalent employees. And I say full-time equivalent, health care reform has now changed what is defined as a full-time employee. We all thought an employee was 40 hours. Now,
right.
Under health care reform, a full-time employee is 30 hours a week.
So is that why we're hearing that a lot of employers are dropping your hours to under that number so that they don't have to pay for your insurance?
Yes. And that's also a lot of what we as health insurance agents will go to an employer and say, okay, here's a way that if you're looking at reducing costs and you're not going to offer a group plan, here's a way that you can lower your penalty and still be able to help out your employees, and you might consider doing a defined contribution to your employees. Offer them something like an allowance. Here's $100 a month. We will contribute to each employee to go out and get whatever plan they get. By doing that, that allows the employee to still go to the federal marketplace. If they qualify for a subsidy, they can get the subsidy. So there's various ways to maneuver, if you will, through this health care reform so that everybody's on a win-win situation.
But is that $100 considered taxable income for the employee?
Good question. I would say go to a tax accountant to make sure on that. But the if I'm thinking right, the employer, that becomes a business expense for the employer, and it may or may not be a benefit or a taxable benefit to the employee. There may be like a Section 125 plan or that sort of thing where they can use to not have to pay taxes on that amount.
So we know that there's, because, you know, I'm sure that would make a lot of people nervous when you start saying, okay, we're going to add $100 to your paycheck every month, but it's not going to be money that you're actually going to see. That would probably make, because that would, I'm sure, bump a lot of people's income up into another tax bracket, and yet they will not be benefiting in terms of the money going directly into their households.
Yeah. Normally it's not in some of the employers that I've, where they do have an allowance, it's not considered part of their income. Because
okay.
It is going specifically to a health insurance plan.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, and there's just so many things about this that it just seems like there's a million and one question marks right now. So, you know, what we're telling y'all tonight is just what Doug knows and everybody else knows to this day. But as you said, tomorrow or October 1st, things may quickly change. There's several groups that are excluded from having to sign up for this new insurance, and that's people who are on what, on Medicare, Medicaid, the Children Health Insurance Programs. They are not required to sign up. Is that correct?
Yes. Actually, what will happen is when you go talk to an insurance agent, cannot determine if you qualify for or is not allowed to make a determination. We can tell you what the rules are, but you'll have to go to the Medicaid. I know you can go to a navigator about the Medicaid, and I tried to find some of the best places to go find out about the Medicaid rules and just exactly where to go sign up. But if you're incarcerated, you can't get on the health plan. There are some religious organizations that are exempt from it. Doesn't mean they can't get on it. Just means they're exempt from being required to get on health care.
Now, give us an example of what type of religious organization would be exempt.
If I remember right, I think it's some of the Muslim organizations and maybe some of the Native American Indians that are exempt from it. Not saying they can't get on it, it's just they're not required to.
And okay, then, let me understand you to say there. Let me pause it. So you're saying these are Americans, but if they're American Muslims and American Indians, they may not have to sign up or they may not be required to have insurance as of January 1, like everyone
right.
else.
Right. There's a whole list of them, and you can go to the healthcare.gov website, I know, and you can find out which ones they are. And some other organizations have applied for exemptions from it also, and so it is a changing number of people. Another group that is, if you will, exempt from it are those who are 65 or older or on Medicare, because the health care reform does not affect, for the most part, Medicare. So if you're 65 or older, you really don't have to get on the health care reform. You're already eligible for Medicare.
Can anyone apply for an exemption?
I'm sure anybody can apply. Whether you can get it or not, it's a different story.
I mean, why not? But okay, I'm just curious because it just sounds like, you know, those are some totally different types of groups, but they're qualifying. So just curious. So okay,
yeah.
So Doug, the thing is, there's a lot of controversy about Obamacare and whether or not, you know, it's a good thing or a bad thing. And we saw, you know, Ted Cruz recently and what he did with the filibuster and all of that. The bottom line is it's going to happen whether we want it or not, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like Christmas Day coming. You know, you just get so excited about it. And whether you want it to happen or not, you just know it's going to happen. There may be a couple of little maneuvers that could happen to stop it or postpone it, but I just really feel like it's going to happen, and we might as well just bear down and get ready for it, and you know, talk to really a healthcare professional, agent, and find out your options and what you can do with it, because there are some options out there, and there are some ways to keep your costs down and to get good coverage.
You know, now one of the things that people have been concerned about is the fact that a lot of doctors appear to be leaving the system because they, you know, refuse to work under this new bill. And so that said, I think what we're understanding, and you give us some clarity on it, is that under the new Obamacare system, you will go into your doctor and, you know, tell him whatever your issue is, and he will diagnose you. But the prescribed treatment will not come from the doctor anymore. The doctor will then put your diagnosis into some form of a computer, and that computer will then tell the doctor what the prescribed treatment for you should be. Is that correct?
Well, I haven't really seen that system per se. There's been a lot of stuff on the internet and on the news about being able to go into your iPad and your smartphones, that sort of thing, and dial in or send some of your medical information in and get a diagnosis that way, or get some prescriptions or some kind of medical treatment that way. And I think that more than anything else is the doctor may be using electronic data for a resource, but it's still needs to be doctor to patient relationship. The thing that may happen on here is they've talked a lot about rationing and, you know, rationing healthcare and that sort of thing. That's likely to happen, and I think we've seen that around the world where countries have had government health care, and it takes a long time to get in and see your doctor, and you're kind of on a waiting list and that sort of thing. We really won't know until that actually happens, but I think that's a strong possibility. As far as doctors leaving, you know, as long as there's a profit to be made and a living to be made, I really kind of think there'll be enough doctors out there, just may not be your favorite doctor. It may be a doctor that you might have to get to know again and develop a relationship with that doctor. So I still think people need care, and people are going to make a living off of it. It may not be as fancy of a doctor's office as we're used to seeing and that sort of thing, or maybe a whole consortium of doctors all in one office or one large building or something. So I think it's going to change the landscape a little bit, but people still want to go into that profession. So it's very likely we'll still have doctors out there to take care of us.
Okay. I understand there are three ways to apply: online, mail, and in person. Are there other ways, or are there just three ways?
Well, that's really the only three that I can think of. We have there is a designation, and I don't know why they really designated it, because we're all web-based pretty much society now as it is, and they call them web brokers, and like myself, I've set up my website to where as soon as this gets going, I'll have links in there where we can go in and enroll somebody. Like you and I are talking right now, you could go, we could do a link.
Your website, so they can go and look if they like.
Do what?
Well, don't us out, but I'm sorry, later this evening, go check out Doug's website. Give them your website, Doug.
Yeah, our website, we just went live here about a week ago. It's TexasInsuranceProviderServices.com. So if you think of the acronym called TIPS, T-I-P-S, then you'll be able to kind of follow it, I think, TexasInsuranceProviderServices.com. I'm also on Twitter, and I guess my Twitter ID is @ TIPS, T-I-P-S, Whisperer, as my Twitter handle. And then we're also on Facebook, so we're on there as Texas Health Insurance Whisperer. I've trademarked that. You can see there's kind of a flow here.
Mm-hmm. we're going to give it out again at the end of the show. But I just wanted you all if you're listening via another source other than the Internet, you can refer to his website if you like right now. You know, Doug, the thing is so many people are nervous because, you know, it's just another thing to worry about and trying to get it right and just so many questions because the manual is just, it appears, too large for any one person to just take the time and read. And sometimes, you know, the devil is in the details, and if we don't take the time to read it, how can we absolutely be certain that we're getting the absolute best deal on our coverage?
Well, I use this scenario a lot of times. When your car breaks down, you take it to an auto mechanic. You don't take it to the person who does your hair or, you know, trims your toenails or whatever. You take it to an auto mechanic. Do you really know that, you know, everything was done perfectly right with it? Yeah, you just trust that person's going to do a good job. I mean, I know how to put the key in the car and turn the steering wheel, and if I had to, I could probably change the oil in my car. But once you go beyond that, I don't know that I could figure out how, you know, where the fan belt is or whatever. So, and the same thing here is we as insurance agents in particular have just been studying this thing up one side and down the other. I'm nervous about it. I have insurance on myself if I make an error or omission called errors and omissions. And we're required to do that with most of our carriers. They require us to have what's called errors and omissions insurance. So we're kind of like, I guess, doctors where they have the malpractice insurance or whatever. We try to do our best we can. Are we perfect? Okay, no, we're not. But I don't think I've studied this hard for anything really in my whole life as I've studied for this. So again, I would just say, really go to a health insurance professional and let them help you guide you through it. Can you read the whole thing? Well, yeah, I guess you could study it up and learn it as well as we do. In that case, you might as well become an insurance agent yourself.
But see, I think the only thing that makes most people nervous is when you say commission is associated with this, because, you know, there's always those people who, you know, are in sales positions that will sometimes sell you something you don't need just so that they can gain a higher commission. So that's the part that just makes me a little nervous that they set it up that way. You know, I think if they had offered everybody a flat fee, maybe that would probably be better than having different programs where, you know, one is higher than the other, if I'm understanding that correctly. Everything is not, if you go for the bronze, if you go for the platinum, there's quite a bit of difference in price, is it not?
Yeah, and really, this is what I've always tried to do so I can sleep at night. I try to guide somebody towards something that makes sense. It really doesn't make sense to me to try to oversell somebody, because they are going to come back to you and if they let you know that you oversold them. And really, if you really feel you are oversold, you still have the ability to change that, at least within the open enrollment period. And, you know, if something happened and you really needed it and you ended up buying a 90-10 plan, and mm-hmm. 6 months later you go, why in the world did I do that? But darn, I can't make a change until next open enrollment, and all of a sudden you came down with cancer. You're going to love mm-hmm. the fact that you had that 90-10 plan. I don't know anybody that got cancer or something and said, you know, I really wish I hadn't bought that real expensive plan.
And I understand that, and we know things happen and can happen, but for someone who is struggling, let's just give you a scenario. Single female, you basically no pre-existing conditions, 40 years old, you know, what type of plan would you recommend to her?
Well, the first question that's going to be asked, no matter who she talks to, how much money do you make a year?
Okay. So why would how much money she makes determine what program is best for her?
Well, right away, if she's under the 400% poverty level, right away, I know she's going to qualify for a subsidy.
Okay.
So, like you say, a healthy lady that's never had really any problems. And really, I'm not really allowed, if you will, to ask. But
okay.
What your health situation is. But if I know what it is, it helps me decide which way makes more sense. Because obviously, if you're dealing with a cancer situation, you're probably going to want the health insurance carrier to cover as much of that as possible, and you have as little out-of-pocket as possible. I talked to a lady today who's going through chemo and radiation for her cancer. Fortunately, she is on a plan, and it's full coverage plan. Well, in her case, she's really glad she has a full coverage plan, 100% coverage. But 6 years ago, I don't know that you could have talked her into that plan. And she is a young lady who, in that case, you may not have wanted her to take that full coverage plan, but she was fortunate enough, if you will, to have taken it, and now she has that kind of coverage. But a lady in her 40s that's healthy and good health and makes less than, say, maybe makes $35,000 a year, she's going to qualify for a subsidy. We'll determine what her rate is on the silver plan. Then we can apply all of that subsidy towards the bronze plan, because it's more out-of-pocket coverage for her if she has to go to the doctor, but the rate is cheaper. And then if she says, well, you know, I really want better coverage, but I like the fact that I've got this lower cost plan, is there anything that can get me up to a little bit better range and still save money on it? Well, then there are some supplemental policies that could be added in and may get her even above the silver level and for less cost than the silver level would have cost her. So, again, that's where a health insurance agent can guide her through that, where the navigator could not have ever mentioned the supplemental plans to help out coverage.
So, okay, that established, if you take another woman, same age, but, and I'll give you an example of someone that I know personally. They've had a diagnosis in recent years of MS and cancer. So is it likely that an insurance agent would sell them both the same plan? If their income were similar, their age was similar, just their medical conditions were totally opposite. One's healthy with no pre-existing conditions, and another one has been recently diagnosed with MS and cancer.
Again, I'm going to go back to the subsidy and see mm-hmm. how much she qualifies for in a subsidy, and then
okay.
Let her know that, okay, there are plans out there that are 80-20. They're guaranteed issue. In other words, mm-hmm. you walk in, and the insurance company cannot ask you if you have MS and you're dealing with cancer. Basically, you're as healthy as the other lady who is healthy and has no pre-existing conditions. And it's her decision of how much expense can she really handle and how much cost is going to be involved when she goes to the doctor for her MS and her cancer. If the cost for treatment and stuff is huge, it may be a real good plan for her to take even a platinum plan or at least a gold plan where she only has 20% of it out of pocket. But her premium is going to be a little larger, but it's something she's going to have to weigh out.
Okay. So, and let me be clear. So everyone, I just caught what you said. So when she goes in to enroll, she does not tell anybody that she has any pre-existing conditions at all. She does not mention that.
Right. She doesn't have to. But an insurance agent, it would be best for her to let the insurance agent know. There's no penalty for admitting it or bringing it out. It's just an insurance agent. I mean, if she walks in and I think she's healthy and I can't tell any difference and she says, okay, I make $35,000 and here's the subsidy you qualify for, I more than likely am going to try to guide her towards the bronze plan because it is a 60-40, so when she goes to the doctor, she's out of pocket 40% of the cost, but her premium is significantly lower, maybe $100 or $200 a month lower. I'm just guessing, but it could be lower than that much lower than the silver plan. But if I know that she's got some health issues, I may say, well, wait a minute, you know, consider this. If you go to the doctor, how much is it to have your chemo? How much is it if you have to have a major surgery to remove the cancer? How much are the biopsies and the travel going back and forth and on and on and on, the care of cancer, how much is it? Well, then in that case, I may guide her to 80-20 or maybe even the platinum plan. From what I've seen recently, what's been released is the platinum design is out there, but what we've seen recently is just some thinking that there may not be that many platinum plans available out there, but we just don't know yet. What we're thinking is the majority of the plans are going to be silver and bronze.
Oh, really? But, I mean, just on the surface, if someone tells me I'm going to offer you a 60-40 plan, and I'm thinking to myself at first thought, well, how the heck am I going to come up with 40%? 40% sounds like a lot, period. I mean, so why would someone even think the bronze is an attractive package?
Well, it's going to depend upon what their health situation is. And if they're pretty healthy, there are some supplemental plans that they could take that would supplement that 40% and help cover that cost where they may end up with better coverage than even the silver plan, close to the gold plan, at less cost than what it would have been for the full silver plan. I've run some numbers recently just playing with them, and if you get the right supplemental coverage, you could save anywhere from $25 to $50 a month, and in many cases have coverage better than the silver plan by policies with it.
Let me ask you if I can understand this. So, in round numbers, let's just deal with the person is healthy, 40 years old, no pre-existing conditions. And if they were to walk into your office and, you know, they met this qualification to get this subsidy, what are we talking about in terms of round numbers if we were to look at a 60-40 plan? With these, what do you call supplemental plans added? What are we talking about?
Okay. Kind of the scenario I've seen is a cost of around, let's just say $300 a month. And I'm just going to throw that number out.
$300 a month? Nobody,
yeah.
I mean,
that's just
crazy.
Now, let's just say you do qualify for a subsidy that, say, subsidize it by $150 a month. Now your cost is $150. On a silver plan, let's say you take it to a bronze plan, and the bronze plan is $200 a month. Well, you can apply that $150 towards the bronze plan. Now your cost is $50 a month. Well, but realize you're now at a 60-40 instead of a 70-30. There are some other supplemental plans out there that are $25 or $50 a month that you can add to that, to where it'll get you actually up above coverage that the silver plan had. So now you add in another $25 to $50 a month. Now you may be back up to $100 a month, but you actually have coverage that's better than the silver plan would have been. So there are some ways to work it to where you can use your full subsidy, you can reduce your cost, and yet add some back in and get better coverage than what you would have had on the silver plan.
But hypothetically, someone who's working 20 hours a week because they just got their hours slashed because the employer is afraid they're going to have to pay their insurance for them, somebody working 20 hours a week, with that scenario I just gave you, where are they going to get another $100, $150, $200 a month or $300 a month to pay for insurance?
If they're only working 20 hours a week, they're probably not making more than maybe $20,000 a year or less. Their subsidy is basically going to cover their insurance.
Oh, great.
The closer they get to 138% of poverty level, the closer they get to basically, let's say, free coverage. I can't really say free, but it's very, very little cost for the premium.
Okay. So, but this is a catch, y'all. And there's always a catch. Doug and I talked about this in the pre-interview. Big Brother is watching. So whatever you're reporting to get this insurance, be careful that you're not underreporting your income, because more than likely it's going to be, or Doug said it's likely, that it's going to be reported to the IRS. Is that not correct, Doug?
That's correct. I was just trying to pull up a W-2 and see where it is on the W-2, and I couldn't find it quick enough. But the employer does have to report what is being paid in, or the benefit that they're receiving for health insurance. And, of course, the employer also has to report the W-2, their income. And so I heard this on recently that when a person goes in to sign up in the first year during this open enrollment, they're not going to be as, let's say, strict about you proving your income. And what they're basically end up doing is the following year, once the IRS has gathered all the W-2s and all the data, they will come back and reconcile the difference, such that if you underreported your income, they're going to reconcile that the following year on your tax return. And so where you're used to getting money back, you may end up paying money in, make up for the tax credit you received the year before, the subsidy you received the year before. So that you're not going to get away with it. You may get away with it for the first year, but they are going to find you. They've hired, what, I think we talked about over 15,000 new IRS agents just to monitor this? Oh, yes, they're keeping track of every bit of it, yes.
This is absolutely crazy. Have you just tuned in? You've come to Center Stage tonight for the topic, Obamacare, what you must know before enrolling. We're talking about so many terms, y'all, that I've never heard before, like health insurance marketplaces and mandates and subsidies. And all these things are things that you need to know before you enroll because they're going to factor in to what type of coverage you're getting, and if you're getting a good deal or if you're not getting a good deal. And who you get to sign you up may mean everything. You may end up paying more. You may end up paying less. So Doug Bacon is talking to us tonight about what we need to know before enrolling in Obamacare, which open enrollment begins October 1st. And we are all required to have insurance as of January 2014. And Doug, I must admit, all of this just makes me nervous. I mean, I just got a lot on my plate already, and I'm thinking, you know, if I happen to be one of those people that, you know, even if you just add another $100 to, you know, what I already have monthly, that makes a difference. If it became another $300, it would still make a difference. And so I'm just thinking of myself, you know, I'm probably, you know, like many others who are probably going to say, where am I going to get this additional money from? And I'm understanding if you don't get the insurance, you're going to be penalized. Is that correct?
Right. In the first year, the penalty is $95 for the whole year, or 1% of your income, whichever is greater. And there is some noise out there that may be waived in the first year. I can't really speak to that, but there is some indications and rumblings that they may not enforce that all that strictly in the first year. Now, in the second year, it's, let's see, 2% of your income, or 300 and something, 327 or 325, something like that. And that's per person. So if you're husband or wife, you both have the penalty if you both don't take insurance. And you have kids, each one of your children, you have to bear a penalty for them also if you don't insure them. And then in the third year, it goes up to 2.5% or $600 and some odd per person. And normally the
okay, so we know enrollment begins October 1st. When does enrollment close?
It will close March 31st. If you walk in and enroll March 31st, your effective date for your coverage will be May 1st. So you won't have coverage until the 1st of May. Now, there's each year you have basically what's called a three-month window. Let's say you lost your job in the middle of the year and you lost coverage because you left your job. That is a qualifying event, so you could go sign up, or you could wait until you go to another employer. You have 90 days to go out and get your own insurance or get another job where they offer a group plan. But if you don't get it within that 90 days, then you're subject to the penalty.
And if you lose your job, you have two options, and I think that's COBRA or to do this Obamacare plan, correct?
Yeah, the COBRA will stay, from what we understand, COBRA will still be out there and in effect, so you can take the COBRA coverage. And for most people, they all seem to think that COBRA is hugely expensive. Well, really what COBRA is you're paying the full amount for the coverage, whereas yeah, so you're not really paying a penalty on COBRA. You just happen to be bearing the portion that the employer is paying of your coverage. And I've advised some people here lately that are on COBRA, they are really in a pretty good situation right now in that they have basically three options available to them. Stay on COBRA and until they run out of COBRA, in which case it gives them time to look at healthcare reform and how it evolves until they run out of COBRA, or go ahead and get on healthcare reform because there are no pre-existing conditions, or maybe look at getting a underwritten plan, in which case that allows them to ride out until their plan renews next year. So they have three options to open to them, or just take nothing. Four options.
So Cobra is really not looking so bad all of a sudden.
Right, right.
Mm. And another group that's exempt, and that's veterans. Veterans who currently have VA benefits that cover medical, they will still be covered under that, correct?
I think so. I haven't looked into that one yet. Most of the time in my past experience, when I talk to a veteran that has their coverage through the VA, I really end up not having a conversation with them anymore. So I think that is exempt from it, but I don't quote me on that. I really haven't looked into that part of it.
Okay, because I just haven't seen anything about veterans having to be a part of this. So I was just assuming that they would be exempt from having to, sign up for it.
Well, maybe I think they're on TRICARE is what most of them have, and so that may have to bring in the essential health benefits. Essential health benefits are EHBs. That's the where they have to cover drugs and prescription drugs. They have to cover doctor visits, hospital stays, ambulance, emergency visits, some mental health, maternity benefits, those kind of things. That's what the essential health benefits are.
Mm-hmm.
So they may have to change to what's called a qualified health plan, QHP. You'll see that acronym out there.
I did, yeah, QHP. Okay. So let's go back for anyone who tuned in late and is worried about how their insurance is going to be, like if they have job-based insurance, how that's going to be affected as of January 1. An employer who has you on his payroll as a full-time employee, they're required to cover what for you?
Well, if they have less than 50 employees, they're not really required to keep it at all anymore. In fact, it may be advantageous for them to consider a fine contribution, like an allowance to them, which allows that employee to go out and seek coverage on the federal exchange, in which case that employee may qualify for a subsidy and may want to switch to a lower coverage plan. So that by just offering a group plan, it may not always be the best option for all the employees. And some employees, it may be a real good option, and that the employer is paying for as much of it as they can afford, and that keeps them from, they may be a highly compensated employee, in other words, their W-2 income may be more than, say, $45,000 or $50,000, in which case they won't qualify for a federal subsidy, so that group plan may be real good for that class of employers.
So if you work for, like, a Xerox, and you work a 40-hour work week, what will that mean in terms of your employer covering your insurance? Will they have to cover your insurance under this new plan?
They've postponed the requirement that employer has to cover or offer a group plan to large employers. The feeling out there is that employers still are trying to attract good employees, and one of the best ways to attract them is offering group health insurance. So, yes, they will go out and look at their plan and see if they're offering the best plan that they feel they can offer to attract the employees that they want. That is one of the incentives to having a group plan. Being a large employer, they are required to have a group health insurance. However, the mandate to do that has just been postponed for a year.
So, okay. So if you're someone who today, we know open enrollment begins October 1st, and I'm sorry. Open enrollment begins October 1st, and we know everyone's supposed to be insured by January 1. And we know even if we went and enrolled October 1st, we're not going to be covered until January 1. That said, if you have a situation that you need covered right now, where do you go and get insurance in that interim?
There really isn't anywhere that you can right now. If you're healthy, you could apply for a normal underwritten plan where they ask health questions, and I recently have been writing quite a bit of that business for people who want to sit out for a year, still have coverage, but they want to have an opportunity to take a look at healthcare reform and see how it evolves. If they have a bad health condition, they're just out of luck. They're just going to have to wait till January 1, unless they happen to be in the risk pool. From what I understand, the risk pool is still available out there, but it will end on December, I believe, 31st. So they will have to switch over to the new. I'm just talking to a man today who is enrolled in the risk pool, and he knows that he's will lose that insurance beginning January 1, so he will have to look at switching over to the new health care. But if he didn't have any, then the only option is to go to the risk pool or sit out and wait or stand in line down at the county hospital.
Let's define that sitting out. So if someone opted, like, you know, I'm confused with this new system, and I don't, you know who to trust, and I don't, you know, feel like all the kinks are worked out, you're saying that first year they may only be penalized $95.
Right, or 1% of their income. If they're a high-income person making, what, $100,000 or six-figure income, then they will have a 1% penalty that they'll have to pay in the first year.
A good scenario, if a person is a healthy person with no pre-existing conditions, they just don't, you know, understand everything and not very clear and not going to be ready to sign up by January 1, they can just sit it out and only be penalized $95 or 1% of their income.
Right, yeah,
okay.
For the first year, yeah.
That may be an option.
To do that too, or at least
it
they plan to do that.
I'm just saying, y'all, that may be an option for some people because it just seems like, I mean, and I'm saying this with all sincerity, I don't see a lot of people being able to afford this. I really don't. I see a whole bunch of people who will look at the numbers and say, it just doesn't work for my budget. And I can empathize with them because, you know, if it turned out that they told me tomorrow this insurance was going to cost me $300 a month, I think I'd have to sit out the first year. Because I just don't see another $300 for insurance. And, you know, to my knowledge, I don't have any pre-existing conditions. And so that would concern me greatly that I would have to pay $300 for, and I don't have it.
Well, in this particular year, yes, you still have an option that if you're in that scenario where you are that healthy, there are plans out there that may only run $100 a month. Depending upon your age, but I've written several plans here lately that are less than $100 a month. Now, they have a real high deductible, $10,000, but we're still able to offer them a copay of $35 to go to the doctor for runny nose, sore throat, those kind of things. The flu has prescription drug plan with it, and your typical health insurance, a 70-30 or 80-20 plan. So there are plans out there for those people right now, and by having a plan, even if it's an underwritten plan, they won't have to pay the $95 penalty, but they will have credible coverage. It may not be a qualified plan coverage, but because they are on a plan, they don't have to have their plan conform yet to healthcare until next year when they have their annual enrollment.
And let's be clear, if you have insurance and you're happy with the insurance you have, you are not going to have to change. who they're talking about is that 48 million people who don't have insurance of any type that's going to have to conform to this new program. Listen, get on the phone lines. If you got a question for Dr. Knight, you know, he is open to answering questions. You know, there's still a lot of kinks to the system, and he's very honest to say he does not have every answer. But to the best of his knowledge, he's going to do the best that he can to answer it based on what he has learned about this Affordable Care Act. So if you are a person who is uninsured, maybe you have several children, maybe you have some pre-existing conditions, maybe you have some concerns about who you can trust to enroll you. Doug, can you enroll people in all 50 states, or can you just enroll people in Texas?
Right now I'm primarily focused on Texas. If the way insurance agents and the way it works across the country is an agent has to be licensed in the state where he is writing business, and what we call writing business or enrolling people. I am licensed in some other states, but what I've chosen to do is stay primarily in Texas. And to become licensed in all 50 states, it's going to be quite expensive to undertake that. So I'll let the other agents in the other states take that on.
Now, you know, I was looking up on several of the websites and things about Obamacare, and, you know, because I really wanted to really get a good understanding of what this was all about. And I understand that Obamacare really was put in place to regulate some of the worst practices of for-profit healthcare providers. So was the industry so bad that they needed to come in and regulate it and change everything around? Was it really, I mean, if you've been writing it, was it that bad to begin with? Writing
insurance, that's going to be a matter of opinion, but if you're asking for my opinion, the people from other countries were coming to the United States to get care. And we heard about that all the time, where they would literally just, Canada might be an example, or some other countries, because we had such great care here. Are there problems in it? Okay, yes, but there's problems in just about everything that's going along. Can we solve all of them? No. This has become, well, it's going to be quite cumbersome on all of us. I won't say hidden because they're not hidden, but there are taxes that many of us haven't realized that we're paying. There is a tax that is already in the plans that are in the group plans that are already in place that were implemented the first of this year. There's a 2% tax that's in all the group plans. Now, it's already part of your premium calculation. It's already in your quote, but there's other taxes in there that we just don't see yet, but we're going to see a bunch more as this thing goes along.
More taxes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's going to cost us all in some form or fashion, yes.
Wow. And, y'all, I think I forgot to give the call-in number. If you'd like to ask Doug a question tonight, the call-in number is 347-850-8390, then press 1. Again, the call-in number is 347-850-8390, then press 1. So, you know, I just scratch my head because I just feel for the person who has four or five kids, you know, makes a decent living, and now they have, you know, I mean, just give us a round number, and it doesn't have to be just to the penny, but I just need people to understand where we're going with this. If you have like four or five kids, and let's just say you make $60,000 a year, and nobody really has any pre-existing conditions per se, what is that person looking at? You know, if they have five kids, it makes about $60,000 a year for insurance coverage.
Well, they're probably in their 30s or 40s. So each person, well, I don't know what a four-person family would be, but I'm going to guess.
Are we saying maybe $1,000 or better?
I'm going to guess probably $600 for the family. Would be a rough estimate. for family coverage, $600 to $700 a month. Now, if they're making $60,000 a year, they are going to qualify for a subsidy because the subsidy now is based on husband and wife. 400% of poverty level for husband and wife is about $92,000. So they are going to qualify for a subsidy, which will lower that $600 or $700 cost for their whole family plan. So
give us that range of how people qualify for those subsidies. What's the bottom floor, and then how does it go up from there?
Well, okay, if you're an individual, single,
mm-hmm.
400% of poverty level is about $45,000. And it's
mm-hmm.
a graduated scale, so the closer you get to $15,000 income, that's the higher subsidy you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So the less you make, the higher subsidy you get. The closer you get to the $45,000 level, it gets almost to zero subsidy, finally at the $45,000. Now, two people, husband and wife married, their two times that, so about $92,000 is
mm-hmm.
400% of poverty level. So if they make $60,000, then they will qualify for a subsidy. If they have kids, then that poverty level, 400%, goes up even higher. So I don't remember how high the max is, but it's over $100,000 is 400% of poverty level. So if they're still at $60,000 a year, they're still going to qualify for an even larger subsidy. It's in the system so that when you go to healthcare.gov, even right now, you can go there and maneuver around the website and find where the subsidy calculator is, and it'll get you pretty close to what your subsidy is going to be. You just don't know what the premium is going to be yet. We have some guesstimates, but it's all guesstimates right now. Blue Cross Blue Shield is probably going to be the biggest player in Texas that we've heard, and their rates haven't been released yet. I don't think we will get those until either Monday or maybe not till Tuesday. We've been told that we can get our certification with Blue Cross on Monday. But right now, nothing has been released on them. We think that Blue Cross is going to be the biggest player in this in the first year. Some of the other companies like Humana and Cigna and Assurant, Aetna, some of those are going to sit out for a while or just only have coverage in specified areas of the country.
So who doesn't qualify for a subsidy?
If you are over 400% of poverty level in income, if your employer offers a qualified health plan and you can't go to the federal website. You can go to the federal exchange and purchase, but you won't be able to get a subsidy unless it's a unaffordable plan. In other words, if the employer is making you pay more than 9.5% of your gross income towards the health insurance, towards a group health plan, then that's considered unaffordable. Then you can go to the federal exchange or marketplace and apply for a subsidy and get coverage on the federal marketplace. Those are the two main ones that would keep you from not qualifying for a subsidy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the main ones.
And I think one of the things I found that, and I think it was something like this, when comparing job base to the marketplace, whether you qualify will depend on what kind of coverage your employer offers. If your job base coverage is considered affordable and meets the minimum value, you won't be able to get lower coverage or premiums or out-of-pocket costs in the marketplace. And this is true no matter what your income and family size are. Is that true?
Yes. If your employer is offering a group plan and it's a qualified plan and your employer's and your contribution towards your group coverage – less than 9.5% of your annual income, then you can still go to the federal marketplace to purchase and opt out of your group plan, but you will not be allowed to get a subsidy to help pay for your plans because your employer is offering a qualified plan.
And that's regardless of your income and family size.
Correct. However, your spouse can go and get coverage where you won't be able to as the employee.
Mm.
But as long as the employer doesn't offer spousal coverage, then the spouse can go get coverage.
Mm.
So again, it comes from an insurance agent helping design the plans that would best fit each scenario. Some employers that may want to offer all the way across the board to all their employees, spouses and family, all of them a group part of the group plan. Some of them may not want to, but it depends upon the demographics of your employee base.
And I understand that your employer can tell you whether the insurance plan offers, I mean, the insurance plan that they offer meets the minimum value and can provide you with information to determine if the plan is considered affordable to you. So they can do that. They'll know that.
Yes. Us insurance agents will help them get to that point. All the plans that are offered beginning January 1, unless you're already on a previous plan, have to conform to health care reform, or they won't be a qualified plan. So that part is going to be the biggest issue. The biggest issue is going to be really how much the employer is going to contribute to the cost of the plan as to whether it's going to become an affordable plan to the employee or not.
You know, Doug, it does. And, you know, y'all, I'll be honest with you, I definitely will be calling Doug after the show just to get some clarity for my own self on my own insurance. And I don't know how y'all are faring out there. I wish y'all get on the phone lines and let me know, let Doug know if we're making this clear enough or if y'all still have questions, because I definitely have many about my own personal insurance after tonight. And I'm just, because I'm thinking, Doug, I really don't see that the people that wrote this bill really thought it out. I mean, the economy is in the tank. People are losing their full-time, you know, jobs, and, you know, those jobs a lot of times are being cut to part-time jobs. And so I just don't see the economy really being strong enough for this shift to come in right now. I just don't see it. And so I'm just amazed that we're doing this right now and making it mandatory by January 1 when I just don't think a lot of people are ready for it. Or financially, I just don't think they're ready.
I would have to agree. It's mind-boggling as to why this is being put in place here at a time like this. All I can say is it's coming anyway, so I'm doing the best I can to handle it and be prepared for it and help guide people through it. And other insurance agents should be doing the same thing and just trying to help us all get through it. And I just hope we come out the other end of it and go, okay, that was all right. We got through it. Now we all have things are going along pretty good.
I am hoping the same. Let's go to the phone lines. We're going to go to a number that I cannot determine the number. It's a block call, but good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Yeah, I'm calling from Skype. I totally agree with all of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how anyone is going to be able to afford this insurance thing. People are struggling. I agree with you. I totally agree with you, and the guy, the doctor that's talking. I just don't see it because people that I know, and it's many, are barely making it.
I agree.
Yeah.
And so, let me ask you this. What size is your family? Caller?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. It's only two of us.
Two of you. So, you know, and let me ask you this, and, you know, you're anonymous. Do you all have pre-existing conditions?
No. None.
Okay. Your ages are about what?
Late 30s.
So, Doug, you got two people, husband and wife?
Yes.
Caller? Okay, so husband and wife, late 30s, no pre-existing conditions, you know, and of course you're going to ask them what kind of income they have, right?
Yeah, well, at this point, because health care reform hasn't kicked in yet, my first thing is I could find them a plan that would run them about $100 to $200 a month on the current system, because they have no pre-existing conditions already. They're both healthy. And that will allow them to look at health insurance for this coming year. Of course, with health insurance or with any insurance, just like even auto insurance, we still have to pay a premium. So there is going to be a cost involved. But at this point, I could design a plan. It may even be as low as $150 or even $100 a month for the two of them to be covered. It's going to be a very high deductible, maybe $10,000 deductible. But if they don't have any situation where they'd have to go in the hospital or something, then really they can have about a $35 copay, at least in Texas anyway, if this is Texas. They'll have a prescription plan. They'll pay they'll have either 70-30 or 80-20 plan, so that if they have stuff that's not in the hospital but they're going to the doctor to get certain kind of care and stuff, they may have to pay a 20% or a 30% of the cost and have a copay. But I can design a plan that will get them in around $100 to $150 a month. Now, when health care reform kicks in, they still may be pretty close to that cost. They may be at, well, maybe $200 to $250, but if their income is low enough, they may have a subsidy that gets them even lower premium than what they are, what I could get them right now in the normal market. So, I mean, there are some ways to work this, and you're in your 30s, so if you're under 30, there is another plan out there called a catastrophic plan between age 26 and 30 that is lower than even the bronze plan, but it's called a catastrophic plan. The cost savings on that is maybe another $50 to $100 a month on that one. But once you turn 30, you can't keep that, or 31, you can't keep that plan anymore on health care reform. But
Caller, let me ask you
that. It may not be really as bleak as it sounds right now.
But no, it is bleak if $150 is going to hurt their budget. Caller, could you and your husband afford another $150 for insurance right now?
No, we already have our insurance. I already had insurance for years. You know, we already had our insurance. But basically, like, I'm talking on behalf of other people that I spoke to. And it's many, because, you know, this has been going on for months now. You know, you run into people and we start, you know, talking. And it doesn't have to be, you know, your friends. It could be strangers. You go somewhere, you just started talking. And they're saying that they're healthy. Why do they need to shell out $150 every month when they are never going to go to a doctor, maybe in 5 years? And if they do, maybe it's for a cold just to get a $6 antibiotics. It just doesn't make sense.
In that case, they may not need to go ahead and get on the plan, because, I mean, the Supreme Court said that they'll still have to pay the penalty, but that's only $95. So, for the whole year.
100% of their income.
Year, yeah. But, I mean, that's only $95. So I myself would probably do the same thing in that case. If I was 30 years old and healthy, I think I would sit out for a year for $95 and see what happens. You know, if I had to go to the doctor, go in there and pay your $100 to the doctor, they're going to write you a prescription, go get it filled, and leave, and because that's kind of what I've done with myself this past year. Here, I'm an insurance agent, and I let my insurance drop. I came off a Cobra, and I elected not to get on a plan now, and I'm going to take a look at health care reform when it begins and see if it's worth it for me to go ahead and get on it or pay another $95 and stand out myself. So I'm in the same situation all of us are.
Yeah. Colin, what I wanted to say also
is that, you know, a lot of people, you know, that I spoke to, whatever, they don't care. People just don't care. You know, they don't like
I agree. You know, and that is probably what's going to happen. You know, by January 1, you're just going to have a whole bunch of people in that 48 million that are not going to do anything.
No. I'm firmly one. You know, me and most people that I know, I don't care. They can do whatever they need to, you know.
And I think that's where most people, because if you don't have it, you just don't have it. I mean, you can't get blood from a turnip. And so I'm thinking that most people are going to go, another $150 a month, I don't have it. So, you know, find me that $95 and, you know, I'll cut you a check. I think really if I was a gambler, I would think it's worth it to try it out for the $95 and just call it a day. I mean, and I hate to say that because I really don't want to get, please, y'all, don't listen to me. I'm just talking for myself. But, I would have to be a gambler because I just see so many other things that money could go toward a month that I just couldn't take, you know, and if they told me $300 a month, I should say, I just couldn't do it. And so I can just see me saying, I'll just sit it out and I'll take my chances and I'll do everything I can, like exercise and take vitamins and, you know, get enough rest and do the best I can to take care of myself and keep myself healthy.
Right, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm over 60 and I'm probably going to sit out the first year and pay my $95 penalty and see what happens for a year. So, and I'm an insurance agent.
I think the people that have
been dealing with pre-existing conditions and haven't been able to get coverage or have had to get into the risk pool and pay over $1,000 a month for coverage that won't cover their pre-existing condition or might cover it for a little while, or have a real high deductible, they're probably going to look at this thing pretty hard. I've talked to a lot of them, and they're just waiting for this to kick in so they can get on the plan. So get on my website. I can help you get enrolled.
Okay. All right, Guy. Okay, we're good. Thank you, caller. We're going to go to area code 682-202. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hey, good evening, Kara. How you doing?
How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I can't complain, Kara. This is Booker Williams out of Fort Worth.
Hi.
Yes, and I've been listening to this show, and I kind of have to take a different spin on this hair care thing.
Really?
Because, as you know, I do have my own business, and right now I'm paying $200 a month for my hair care for my family.
Mm.
Now, I see a lot of people, they say they can't afford it. But,
mm-hmm.
Kara, let me tell you this. People can afford whatever they want to.
Mm.
I'll give you a prime example. I was at a lady house. I was doing a presentation. Now, the business I'm in, it only costs $100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she said she didn't have the money. So when I went in the house, it was a 60-screen TV, 60-inch, surround sounds. She had about $300 worth of weave in her hair. Her nails was done. And she was on Verizon, which is the most expensive carrier around here. And all her kids was decked out. So people, when they say they can't afford it, they lying. This is a matter of priorities.
It's a priority. And so let me ask you, Booker, your family size is what for you to be paying $200 right now?
I have me, my wife, and my two sons.
Now, let me ask you this. Doug, would he be able to continue under the Obamacare plan and get insurance for them for $200 a month?
Well, he can stay on that plan until his next open enrollment cycle. Is that the full amount that you're paying, or is your employer helping for some of that?
I'm paying my own, and it's every year where I can either drop it or change my plan, but it's a yearly thing, but with the insurance, you got to realize, let's be honest, the government has really never taken care of a lot of people in the first place.
Mm.
So we got to start taking care of our own family, because besides, then we have the family.
Yeah, I agree. But I think, Booker, the thing is, you know, I just look at the country right now, there's not any jobs. You know, they're outsourcing the jobs, and they're cutting back the hours of the full-time employees to part-time employees. And so I just sense that there's going to be a whole lot of people that are not going to get it because they really just don't have it. And I understand what you said about the example that you gave, but I think it's a whole lot of other people that are just really trying to just make it day to day. They don't have the 60-inch TV, and they don't have the surround sound. They're just really
right.
Hand-to-mouth.
Yes, I understand that what you're saying, but at the same token, if you remember, the president said in one of his speeches, if it's not a job, you got to create you a job. I don't know if people caught that, but he said himself, if there are not any jobs out here, you got to create a job.
And I hear that, and I think that comes to you can't have too much pride today. You got to do whatever you got to do to survive, and I don't mean knock somebody in the head.
Yeah.
I mean go out there and make an honest living. But at the same time, you know, everybody does not have an entrepreneurial spirit. That's just it. A lot of people just don't know how to go create something. And so, you know, that I found out. I found out there's people who will always work for somebody, and then there will be people who will always be able to create their own jobs. So there's a
right,
difference
right.
out there. And I just feel that way. But, I mean, I understand
yeah.
what you're saying, you know. But it's just I don't know that everybody's going to be able to just pick it up and put it together and be able to create jobs. I just don't. So, Booker, let me ask you this. Is your whole family, besides, I mean, your extended family, is everyone going to be okay January 1 in terms of insurance, or are there some concerns in your family about Obamacare?
No, I don't really concern about Obamacare because we already got it. And if you look at another fact, too, right now, even people that's uninsured, it's going to help them out because they're going to be able to be seen because right now, here in Fort Worth, we have, it's JPS that's ran mm-hmm. by the government, and Dallas is, I think it's Parkland.
Parkland.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Parkland. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But those are examples. I mean, you probably have to wait all day, but you will be seen if you don't have insurance. And I do agree with you, too, Kara, on the point. A lot of people, they just going to ride it out because they really
yeah.
could care less.
And you know, and I really just think it's just not going to register on some people's radar that this is important. And I mean, and I think they've seen it on TV, they hear it on the news every day, but I just think there's so many things coming at people from all directions that this is just going to be one of those things they're just going to have to be told, we're going to fine you or we're going to give you some other type of penalty for them to say, okay, I'm going to comply. I just really feel that.
Right,
so.
Right. And then, too, Kara, you got to look at, too, most of the people in the senators and the House of Representatives, they're millionaires.
Mm.
And I don't know if people know it. Whenever you get out of there, you got free health insurance until you die.
Yeah.
But, see,
speaking of
them, though, they're not even getting this program. Is that not right, Doug? They're not getting under the Obamacare. They have a better insurance plan. Is that not correct?
I think that's right. I think they do have a better plan, and I don't think they are on this are subject to the health care reform.
Mm-hmm. So,
but they already have one that's better than what we're going to see anyway.
So. Oh, yeah.
So the president, the Congress, and the Senate opted out of Obamacare, and they're going to keep what they got, which I understand is better than what we got. And I think somebody tried to ask the president that the other day. I think it was Charlie Rose, and he just refused to answer the question. So, you know, obviously the Obamacare plan ain't so great that the Congress and the Senate and the president want to be a part of it. But that's okay. You know, we're going to deal with it, and we're going to, you know, take it, you know, as they dish it out, but we do have options. And if I'm understanding Doug correctly, you can take this plan or you can go and get your own plan.
Right. You can go to the federal exchange or you can go to private exchanges. Those are marketplaces. They want us to call them marketplaces, and there's a reason for that. Marketplace
okay.
sounds a little more like a shopping mall or a shopping place. An exchange sounds what we've been told, a little more,
bottom basement,
for lack of a better word. and not as a comfortable environment as a marketplace would be.
Because exchange sounds bottom basement.
Oh yeah, or stock exchange type thing, or you know,
right,
where big money's thrown around and that kind of thing, and they want people feeling like it's a kind of like a flea market or kind of like a farmer's market or something where everybody has apples, so you just pick out which apple you want, you know, which orange, that kind of thing. They want you to feel like it's a marketplace where everybody's just going in and shopping around and having a good time.
Right, and I think that's exactly it. Booker, do you have any more comments before we move on?
Oh, I just got a question for the insurance agent.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is all coming into effect on the 1st of January. I just want to know how they're going to enforce a law on all Americans, and then you got people that live in shelters and people that's homeless. How are you going to affect that law? I don't know. I may be asking the wrong question, but how are you going to enforce that law and you people don't even have an address?
So, very good question. And we as insurance agents have talked about that very scenario. And let's just call it the grid, for lack of a better term. If they're on the grid or right on the edge of the grid, for lack of a better term, these IRS is going to hire over 15,000 new agents. And if you are receiving an income from an employer, the employer is required to report your health insurance benefits, if you will, on the W-2. So they will be found if they are earning an income. If they're living under a bridge, then they're really not on the grid anyway, so nobody really knows where they are anyway. As if they go in for some kind of care or something, these doctor's offices and hospitals and all will start logging them in, and it'll take a long time, but there's a whole lot more involved in collecting data here. And Carrie talked about that a little bit earlier about we're going to be exposing a lot of our income and our personal information to these navigators, and it's going to be collected into the federal system, and even us insurance agents are going to be collecting it and putting it into the system. I mean, we're not going to be personally keeping it, but once it's entered into the system to see what you qualify for, you're going to be in there forever type of thing. So there's a big push to go out and find everybody.
Thank you, Booker. We're down to our last 8 minutes of the show. Okay, Doug, tell us what you want us to know. Did we miss anything? We got 8 minutes.
We need to have another two-hour program. But find an insurance agent. Ask an insurance agent to help you through this. I've teamed up with an insurance agency in Fort Worth called ANC Insurance. They're over off of Wichita Street in Fort Worth. And so we put together several agents in there to help people find the right plans and that sort of thing. So, and find out what kind of subsidies you have. Go online to my website, and you can go on and tweet me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. We have our Facebook set up, and also on our website, we will be linked in to healthcare.gov once this thing goes live, and we can enroll people online. So, you know, if you don't want to talk to me, go find another insurance agent. Let them be your first source for finding out what you want to do. And if they're worth their salt or whatever, if they determine that really you should go talk to a navigator and you're pretty close to poverty level or something, 138% of poverty level, then they will guide you to a navigator where the navigator can get you into the Medicaid program and see if you qualify for that. If you're above the 138% of poverty level, then work with an insurance agent and let him or her find the best scenario, if you will, for you, and use your subsidy the best that they can. That's what I would say.
Okay, y'all, that's going to have to be the closing. That's going to have to be the final comment tonight. But, Doug, tell them how to reach out to you. Give them a phone number, website, email, whatever you'd like, a contact information.
We have a toll-free number. It's 855-404-8477. That's 855-404-8477. And we have a website. It's TexasInsuranceProviderServices.com. And I'm on Twitter with my Twitter handle is at, and then it's T-I-P-S for tips, Whisperer, W-H-I-S-P-E-R-E-R. We're also on Facebook, the Health Insurance Whisperer, and you can find us there also. And then if that doesn't work, you want to go talk to somebody live, face-to-face, contact ANC Insurance Agency. They're in Fort Worth at 6215 Wichita Street, and their phone number is 817-531-1900. And that's where my office is, and that's where we can talk to you face-to-face in person.
Well, thank you to Doug Bacon for being with me. He's a managing partner for Texas Insurance Provider Services, LLC. Y'all, listen, tonight we tried to cover from the root to the tooth on Obamacare. So that, you know, hopefully has helped somebody to better understand what they need to do. And Doug has given you his information if you want to reach out to him further to get a better understanding of how Obamacare will be applied to you and your family. Also a reminder, y'all, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Another reminder, we're here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Come and join us here every Friday night, right here at Center Stage. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a coworker to check out the show. Again, we'd like to say in closing, thank you to Doug Bacon for being with us tonight. Thank you, the audience, for listening, for hanging out with us tonight. And we're going to get out of here. We're going to make way for somebody else to come and step to the stage and do what we do. So this is Carrie Hines signing off. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.